Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hello, Egg Chasers. Welcome to the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. In fact, cut that music. It's not right. We need to start with the Japanese national anthem. Yes, we're living in a Japanese world.
Wow.
The rugby tectonic plates have shifted and things will never be the same again. That's JB.
Hello, Timothy.
That is Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And those brave blossoms. Let's have a moment for them. Wow.
Can I just say that's the most WWE moment we've ever had in the studio? Kill the music!
Oh, God. Mr. Miyagi, what's the actor's name? Ken?
Don't know, but...
Ken... Phil, look that up on your laptop. That's the important stat you need. Ken Moriarty.
Wow. We're getting there slowly. You're slowly unravelling his
name. Who's the actor? The actor who played Mr. Miyagi.
Well, more importantly...
Played by...
Ken?
The two people portrayed by Pat Morita.
Pat Morita, there you go. Wasn't far off.
Close enough.
Think how proud he'd be right now.
Well, we've actually visited his homeland of Okinawa.
Okinawa, yes.
Lovely place.
Yeah. Hey, interesting. I got a tweet this week saying, I need to think outside of my small English mind. No, my little Englander mind. Which is an interesting
thing. What were you tweeting about?
I got no idea. It was in relation to last week's podcast, or the last podcast we did. And I was called an effing T, followed by I need to think outside of my little Englander mind. Which I agree with all of the first part of the statement, for the record. How do you think outside of your own mind? And I'm Welsh.
And you're Welsh, yeah. North Walian,
yeah. Exactly right.
Well, you know, that's lovely. That's perfect illustration right there of Twitter. You're not allowed to disagree respectfully. Or you're not allowed to counter an argument with a better argument. You just call someone a twat.
Well, no, the problem was he blocked me before I could establish what had upset him so much, which was devastating because I wanted to say it again. But, you know, we are where we are.
Well, I'm sure they're listening because Howard Stern, the greatest radio presenter of all time, he used to say that the people who... loved him, listen for an hour and a half a day. The people that hated him, listen for 3 hours a day.
Very, very true.
People love to hate him. But on people like James O'Brien, I can't take him for 1 minute anymore. So that breaks that rule. Anyway, Japan, what an unbelievable, unbelievable day of rugby we have just witnessed.
Yeah, and it's different to the other games. I mean, I kind of thought... this about the Ireland game. So what I thought about the Ireland game is it was more impressive than the South Africa game because although they were sort of a bit of a shot in the dark to win, they still did it. There's more expectation. They're at home. It's home World Cup. They've won more in line with expectation. The Scotland game was more the same and more intense because they had to win to go through. They'd already failed against Scotland in the past in King's home, so I guess they're 1-1 now. And it was an amazing, and it's an amazing triumph. You know, there is one element, isn't there, when the underdog does well. But it's nothing altogether when you're expected to do well and then you pull it off. And that's what they did.
That for me, was the possibly the most impressive bit. Was teams have won games playing high-skilled, expansive rugby strategies in the past. There are few teams who, under such pressure, such huge pressure of the situation and the expectation have stuck to that same expansive, highly, incredibly risky strategy and executed it so perfectly for so much of the game. That was so unbelievably impressive.
Yeah,
I mean, you see it a lot with Wales, actually. So opening match of the Six Nations and Cardiff is bouncing and it feels like the biggest match in history. And think, yeah, just the sheer expectation on Wales alone will see them through against England in the opening match of Six Nations, and it doesn't happen. You know, you see it a lot, and you know, I loved it.
And, yeah. And under pressure, teams often revert to ever simpler game plans.
Yeah.
And I think we will see significantly more of that next weekend. I don't think we'll see it from Japan. I think from a lot of the other teams, we will see a very simplified kicking territory-based game and ultimately a lot of one-out rugby hoping to win the arm wrestle, whereas Japan did not go down that route at all. They continued with what had made them such an impressive team in all of their previous games.
So I'm just going to go back on something I said then, which was this was more impressive than the Ireland game. But the fact that they won it means that the Ireland game, to me now, is actually more important. And I'll explain why. Which is, they've shown they can do Scotland. And I think, you know, before the tournament, everyone was like, oh, well, it'll be the Scotland-Japan game, which will be the toss-up between the two. Turns out, no, it was this. It was the Japan-Ireland game. And now the fact they've done it against Ireland, who are genuine World Cup contenders, or at least they were 2 years ago. Maybe they're not.
1 year ago.
One year ago,
they were Team of the Year. Johnny Sexton was Player of the Year. George Schmidt was Coach of the Year.
Also having champagne in Monaco. We were having champagne in Monaco.
They won the Six Nations. Leinster won everything they possibly could. They were the team to beat. They'd beaten the All Blacks in the autumn.
And
they were the team.
Exactly. So they are a different proposition to Scotland.
Yes.
Completely.
Yeah.
Playing a different way. And they beat them. So actually that might be the more important one in hindsight.
Oh, without a doubt. And you're right to mention the expectation, because they won as massive underdogs against South Africa. They won as underdogs against Ireland, albeit on home turf. But they were... It was toss of a coin, knife-edge stuff. And they had the weight of expectation and the convoluted and unusual build-up to the game. And like you say, to be calm under pressure like that and the top 2 inches to be so composed.
Yeah, I mean, how easy would it be just to lose your head?
Or just, like, it's not even lose your head at times, but just the execution. Because the tries that they scored were phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. To execute those kind of tries, the offloading game, the expansive game, the pace that so many of their players put on it, it was just phenomenal to see.
It is interesting, isn't it, that Gregor Townsend, that's one of the things he said, he wants to make Scotland the fastest fastest playing rugby team on earth, and he was undone by actually the fastest playing rugby team on earth.
There were times when I was watching that game thinking, Gregor Townsend has received, in the past, rightly, a lot of positive praise for the way he's got Scotland playing, the mercurial talent that he's built and has developed the team around, the speed of the play. And Japan just looked at that kind of strategy and said, you think that's good? Watch this, boys. This is how it's really done.
The only person that will be more devastated at the defeat than anyone Scottish is the person who made the Brighton Miracle movie. What's the point in that now? Yeah. Who cares? Who cares?
Or
just every game.
Or has that genius now got a franchise? Because that's where the money is.
Well, they need to keep
up. A trilogy.
Yeah. Oh, my word. So, back to the speed of how they play. One of the things that I was thinking was, are they making... Because when you watch them play, they look like they are always making the right decisions. That's why they're so impressive. They either go forward, they latch, or you know, they make a half break, or they offload for the first try. Everything looks like the right decision. And I posed a question on Twitter. Are they making the right decisions? Or is their skill level so high that they either get bailed out or everything just looks like the right decision?
So I saw that, and my thought was, the right way of answering it is, when you are playing that strategy of rugby and you are playing it so well, you're executing it so well, you're actually creating multiple right decisions from every phase. So, and what I mean by that is, if you're hitting the line and whether you go to deck and you've got two clearers who are right there, or you offload just before contact, and the guys that you're offloading to are taking it at full tilt, Japan actually have multiple correct options in almost every situation because their decision making is so good. So they can pick three right options multiple times.
But it also compounds itself. So because, I mean, it's really simple little things. Like their props, for example, I was watching it today, and the ball carrying of their props, they have real subtlety. So they'll take a charge, but they'll effectively, they'll do a little step just before contact that gets them an extra half yard. So the fact that it compounds itself, so when you're getting an extra half yard from your prop, when you're hitting the ball, the gain line at such speed that you get beyond it, it means the ball is quicker, which means the next phase is it compounds and becomes easier.
And look at the way their two props, their two replacement props came on.
Yeah.
Now, for a lot of teams, England included, by the way, you get through your first two props and there's a noticeable drop-off. Wales are the same. In fact, name me a country where it isn't the same. These two chaps come on and start running the show. I mean, a couple of times, there's a guy called with the blonde hair.
The reserve tight head.
Nakajima, I want to say. Like, he would be first receiver, pop it inside to his mate. Two or three times. I'll give you another example of wrong decisions looking right because your skills are so high. One thing which annoys me the most is when they've got you've got a 3-on-2, you just wing the miss pass out. But they were winging the miss pass out almost deliberately to pull it back inside straight away. It was glorious.
But here's another question. Are their skills so high, or are they just brave enough to try?
I think a bit of both. I think their skills are as high as any we've seen. Their handling skills.
You look at Vunipola and Genge, for example, and as a couple of England props that got really good hands.
They have Sinclair's very
as well,
good.
Yeah.
But no, I think their handling is legitimately brilliant. The Matsushima try with the miss pass to Fukioka, who almost beats, and then the offload, Matsushima goes in. And also the Kenki Fukioka try against Ireland. The handling for that was just unreal. The timing of the running and the timing of the passes and the speed of the passes were just unreal. So they have skills genuinely, I think, as good as anyone, their handling skills. But there is also an element that they are totally unafraid to try it. And I go back to the point I made before where I said a lot of teams in that kind of high-pressure situation will revert to a type. The majority, certainly the Northern Hemisphere teams, is the simple kicking and brutal game plan, which we will see next weekend from a lot of them. Japan did not revert to that type.
So how much do you think the tectonic shift, tectonic plates of rugby might shift as a result of Japan doing that? Will other countries look at that and think,
well, maybe
there's a blueprint?
Maybe, but there again, I think coaches play to their strengths. So cast your mind back 4 years when Japan go over the line against South Africa, and they did it from a solid scrum. They go all the way to one side of the field and they pull it all the way back and they go in the corner. And that again was built on good hands, good skills, fast movement of the ball, ruck and run type rugby. And that was under who? Eddie Jones. So Eddie Jones has now moved on, and you wouldn't describe England as playing in that way whatsoever. So I wonder if some of this is like in their DNA of how that group of players play. But also, if there is a coach like Jamie Joseph or like Eddie Jones, and they are presented with a pack of players like England, well, they go, I can go back to that style of play. However, you know, I've got some massive men. Let's just go forward.
But I suppose we can go on to Gregor Townsend in a bit. But just to pick up on that and maybe just pin it as something to talk about, I agree with you. Great coaches will adapt their style of play based on the weapons they have at their disposal. And I wonder if Gregor Townsend is actually trying to, has imposed his way of playing on a group of people that can't execute.
Well, I've got some thoughts on this.
Well, should we just pin Scotland one to one side and talk about the positives of?
Hang on. Before we go forward, I just want to go back to the styles of play. Will we see more of this in different countries? The short answer is no. Because can you imagine the stick that you'd get if you showed up at South Africa and tried to make Eben Etzebeth play that style of rugby and then drop him because you found another prop, like, you know, Moore or the other
row,
lad.
Another second
yeah,
row.
Yeah, or Thompson. You think, actually, well, this guy's got better hands, and then I'm going to go forward with him. That's why I don't think we'll see it, because all the other teams are so powerfully built and so good at what they do anyway. You'd be insane to go down to what would be perceived to be your sixth or seventh best lock in order to get that sort of effect.
But it could change the thing in the sense that South Africa top brass might look at it and go, if we can produce these humongous men, if we can just produce them coming through as adults with that skill set,
if they can
Well, arguably, that's why New Zealand have won 2 World Cups on the bounce.
Yeah, because actually they can do it.
Yeah, you do have players who can do everything.
Brodie Retallack can do that.
Yeah, Whitelock and Barrett can all do that. Now, just another thing that why I think it is more difficult for other nations to replicate what Japan have done, and that is the access afforded to both Eddie Jones before the last World Cup and Jamie Joseph before this World Cup. Mm. Jamie Joseph has had the best part of 12 months of total control of a squad of 40 players, training with them near full-time, where they are not playing for clubs, unless he specifically says they can go and play a few games for the Sunwolves. No other coach in world rugby is ever going to have that kind of control.
They're playing local club rugby for the...
This is the question that I had.
They're playing Sunwolves B team, and when he deems it necessary and appropriate, they can step up to Sunwolves first team. And so the average player in that Japan squad, there was a tweet today from, I think, Russ Petty. The average player in that Japan squad played 90 minutes of Super Rugby in this year's competition, and only when Jamie Joseph said it was right.
So I have lots more questions based on that, which is, yeah, I think I get it. I think I get it. It seems counterintuitive to me to have you players playing so little, but hey, I've not just come out of a World Cup group, so what do I know?
Yeah, four wins in a World Cup group when you were third ranked going into it.
Yeah, exactly. And my other thought on this would be, okay, so you've done amazing things now, but would Japan rugby be better served by having a Sunwolves team which was consistently competitive, which filled out a 40,000-seat stadium every week rather than a 70,000-seat stadium, well, now, and we don't know when the next time will be?
Well, there is another control sample on that regard, and that's the Jaguars, who played that whole squad played together throughout the whole of Super Rugby. They played closer to 900 minutes per man as an average. They got to the final and then have been, well, disappointingly poor to their own World Cup standards in this tournament.
Interesting.
And Japan are the... Here's a little stat. Japan, in the last 2 World Cups, are the only side outside of New Zealand who've won every game to have only lost one game.
Yeah.
Sorry, run that past me again.
So New Zealand have won every game.
Yep. In the last 2 World
Cups. In this World Cup currently, yep. And the last one, if you take the two combined, Japan are the only team to have lost one game over that same period. They've played less because they didn't make the pools. They didn't make the knockouts.
Yeah, but they only lost one game.
They only lost one game.
First team to win 3 games and go out of the pool stages in the last World Cup. And they've won it all 4 in this. So they've won 7 out of their last 8 World Cup games.
World Cup games. And the win percentage, New Zealand's is 100%. Australia's is 90%. And Japan in third place, 87.5%. Scotland, meanwhile, have won less than two-thirds of their matches in this and the last World Cup combined.
Yeah, so I've just got one closing question on Japan then, and the minutes played. Project this five years forward. Which rugby nation will be in better health, Argentina or Japan?
Good question. And Japan losing the Sunwolves, therefore losing the ability to get them any top-level games, unless they're going to play in the Japanese top league, that does look like a blow to the strategy that they've been implementing.
It does.
To this point.
On the flip side, Japan is it's up there in the top 5 richest countries on earth. Third, isn't it?
Third biggest GDP.
And they've had this incredible showcase of Japanese rugby. Sponsors, big businessmen.
Well, they already
government
have it,
state funding or whatever, it's going to step up another level.
You'd hope so. You definitely hope so.
Talent identification.
What do you do with Japan?
Scientific research, all the rest of it.
Well, what do you do with Japan in terms of where do they get their rugby now? Like, what tournament do they join?
Well, their domestic league, I don't know how good that quality is. I'm not
it's reasonable. I mean, they've got some real superstars in there.
Yeah, but I think it's mixed. From what I've seen, you have the superstars and then you have the salarymen.
The salarymen. Oh, yes, let's talk about the salarymen again.
But they're playing in the... I can't remember the exact name of it, but the Pacific Rugby Championship. So they're playing against Samoa, Tonga, Fiji, USA, and it might be Canada, which is kind of the Pacific Six Nations. So they're playing in that, which is not a bad standard, or the top of that is not a bad standard, i.e. Japan and Fiji. But you drop it down, or you pick a Fiji where... all of their players are playing in Europe, all of their top-level players, Radrada and Nakarawa and Tuisova and the like, are all playing in Europe, and it's not the same level test as playing South Africa.
And you have the same problems with all of these annual competitions, which is by taking away one team and putting them in with the big boys, you basically dilute the competition in the the standard of the other competition which you subtract from. So, yeah, there's no easy answer to that one.
There is not, and there's a lot of... Rugby still has the problem of the global calendar, which still has not got a solution yet.
You would expect to see them tour more, though, wouldn't you, in November?
They'll definitely tour.
I mean, they've got to. Like, in fact, they're going to be a draw. It's not... It's a sympathy game.
No, not at all. But just playing four games in November is not good enough. They've got to have... as regular as they want international calibre
games over here, and they're now a legitimate tour destination, they've already got quite a lot of calendar then.
You've got seven games in 52 weeks.
Yeah, but then you've only got the five more games which Six Nations guys have.
But then what you're ignoring in that is the 20-odd games that the Six Nations guys will play in Premiership and Heineken Cup.
But actually, looking at what we just said about Jamie Joseph's access to players and how much time they've played, it's, how can you square that circle? Which is, we need more Tier 1 games, but then this team has no actual, high-end minutes.
Yeah, or very, very few. Yeah. Very, very few.
Like, which one is it? It can't be both.
Just a couple of things. Kenki Fukioka scored again. Mm. Did you know he's retiring after the World Cup?
Yeah.
I didn't realise this until today. 27 years of age, he's retiring to become a doctor.
Yeah.
What a waste of time. Like, genuinely, you can become a doctor whenever you want. I mean, it's not difficult compared to playing international wing. I know doctors will be offended by that, but there's literally thousands of doctors, probably millions on Earth. There's only a handful of international wings.
Yeah, yeah.
Good God, no.
And he was, I was so glad, because he was one of the guys I said...
You did, I was
look
just
out
about to say...
Before the tournament, look out for Kenki Fukioka.
Yeah, he was injured, one to watch.
He was injured in the first game. He only played the last 10 minutes of the second game.
And scored.
And he has managed to score four tries in two games and 10 minutes.
Yeah. My God. Incredible. I mean, the whole point...
Matsushima as well. The two of them are unreal. Unreal.
The whole point, like Jamie Roberts has done, of training to be a doctor whilst you play rugby, is so you never need to be a doctor. It's one of those interesting... Oh, we've got Jamie Roberts in. He's a doctor. Hopefully he'll never be a doctor, because that's why he did it.
Right. I'm going to say I've got something very, very exciting that's just landed on my phone on a WhatsApp group. But I don't know whether I can play this now. So can you hit pause? And hopefully we'll be back with you shortly. You can just put a little marker on it. I don't think we should play that.
Right, well, that's the pause over.
yeah, we're not playing that.
So was he drunk in full kit?
Technically, I think he was drunk in full kit.
Okay, well, you can put two and two together then.
He'd had a good time.
He had a great time.
Good.
What were we talking about?
Too many strong zeros.
Yeah. Oh, my word. Strong zeros. That's my new business plan, to import strong zeros.
Let's do the Scotland post-mortem.
Well, yes, let's do that.
Let's do that. So, with the yin, the yes has to be the yang.
So it started so well for Scotland.
It did.
That first 10 minutes or so, it looked like they were able to handle the fast rucking, offloading, wide game of Japan. And they got brilliant front football that led to that Finn Russell try.
Yep.
Everything is going great.
Turnover penalties and then a try.
Yeah.
It was looking good.
Mm.
And then the tide turned. It was a monumental tide shift. And it was after that first Scotland try, it was all four Japanese tries were scored. And, I mean, the stats at half-time were so heavily in Japan's favour. It was like nothing I've ever seen. It was 80% possession. It was Scotland made 120 tackles to 20 for, or 20 something for Japan. It was 300 plus metres made ball in hand for Japan and 50 metres made with ball in hand with, for Scotland. It was just all Japan after that first 7-10 minutes.
So, I mean, we can talk about specifics on their actual game. We'll get onto the general point of Gregor Townsend in a minute, I suppose. But I looked at the Chris Harris selection. I mean, he's a big old unit. He can play a bit, but he's a big old unit. And as far as I could tell, the game plan was, let's use Chris Harris as a dummy runner all day. Because that's
Actually, the most he got the ball
was when he was on the wing.
When he was pushed onto the wing.
He actually gave him a bit of go forward.
And he did really well.
He did great on the wing. They had this big lump that they never used. And I just couldn't help thinking, okay, well, if you're not going to use him, and I understand there's the, you know, his presence will attract other people, create space.
But he's not that big, is he? He's not Jake Roberts.
No, exactly. No. And he can play a bit. But I couldn't help thinking, again, if you're not going to use him and then you're going to find yourself points down and needing something, that's where a Rory Hutchinson on the plane.
Yeah. Well, do you know,
is the kind of player that they missed.
Yeah.
I mean, where I am with this Scotland performance, and I sometimes I get things wrong, not often, but one of the things which will seduce me.
Oh, you got a lot of things wrong. So what did you put just immediately before the game?
I do not fancy Japan.
Not one bit.
Not one bit.
is there any predictions you've got right this World Cup?
We'll get into why I was right. and I was watching the warm-up, and I'm watching Finn Russell juggle rugby balls flawlessly, and then every now and again throw one onto his foot, kick it up, and carry on juggling. I'm like, there is no way Finn Russell can mess it up again as much as he did tonight. He's too talented, and this is my biggest weakness. In the same way that I would look at Pierre Spiess and think, no way can anyone beat a team with Pierre Spiess in it. It can't be done. But there is more to rugby than that. So I'm kind of with you boys, which is massively disappointing. And basically, I'd say their best player was probably Chris Harris, only for his contribution in the last 20.
Once he got onto the wing.
Once he actually was given the ball every now and again. So it was just odd. And a lot of Scottish, I don't know how reactionary is the talk of, well, Gregor Townsend's got to go.
I think it's too reactionary. For me, he's only been there 2 years.
Who would you replace him with is the answer.
Well, that is another question.
Cockers.
But he's been there for two years. Yeah. Everyone loved what he did at Glasgow, including winning the Pro 14. I think he needs another World Cup cycle. I would give him a full World Cup cycle to properly implement what he wants
Bernd
to do.
Cotter was available?
No chance. It's a step backwards.
Yeah, but Vern Cotter, you know, still very highly thought of.
What about Fern Cotton?
Well, that is the question.
It's a step forwards.
Yeah, so, I mean, I am broadly speaking in the camp that says Townsend is a good enough coach to warrant a World Cup cycle.
Yes. You
know, coming in 2 years, with 2 years to go, bearing in mind he did take over a very good squad, though, with some great work done by Cotter.
And work done by him in building the Glasgow team and the core talent in the Glasgow team.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second and then pick up on exactly what you just said, JB. Scotland finished the last World Cup being arguably robbed of a semi-final spot.
Yep.
Yeah.
The wins against Australia very early in Gregor Townsend's reign were very early in Gregor Townsend's reign. So it's only with hindsight you go, how much of that was kind of just keeping the motor running for what Vern Cotter had done? And what have we seen in the last couple of years? And again, I'm playing devil's advocate here. A lot of Scotland's basics, which Vern Cotter had elements of what Gregor Townsend does with this expansive game, but had it on the top of some absolutely fundamental, solid basics. And those basics have gone missing for Scotland in the last 2 years, who have suddenly become a wooden spoon contender team in the Six Nations and eliminated from a pool in a World Cup.
Yeah, there's other questions, isn't there? Like, what is this team selection all about? What was the squad selection all about? Leaving people like Hugh Jones. I mean, if Gatland left Hugh Jones at home, and gave the excuse like he did for his two props, I want durable players, it's a World Cup, you'd probably say, OK. But Townsend's not Gatland, and he's not qualified. So therefore, this kind of goes in, you know, with a big cross, because Hugh Jones is a remarkably good, good player.
And waiting until Scotland are really bad against Ireland to go, oh, maybe Magnus Bradbury might be a guy in my back row.
Yeah.
Well,
instead of Ryan Wilson.
And then you've got to look at things, maybe not a test number eight, Ryan Wilson, as good a lad as he seems to be.
Yeah, great guy.
The other one would be, like, you've got your captain, surely you start him. Now, I'm a massive Brown fan, for the record. I mean, I think he's a marvellous player.
They're two very good. They've got good options at hooker.
But then, why is he your captain if you're not going to start him?
Yeah.
I mean, he's got either starts or he doesn't start. So,
and one that hasn't been mentioned in this, but I think will be mentioned in the debrief in Scotland, Greg Laidlaw. I've liked Greg for a long time. Grieg for a long time. He's there to do, well, two things very well. One is box kicks and one is kick sticks. His percentage kicking at sticks is very, very good. And he can control the game quite well. But the consequence of him being on to control the game is he slows your game down. Yeah. And I think there was a notable improvement in performance when George Horn, who is a live wire scrum half, came on.
100%. Conversely, the importance, and I've forgotten the Japanese nine now, starting Japanese nine, whatever it is, the importance of that, he might be the single most important player at the Rugby World Cup because he went off and the speed of Japan just slowed right down. And it's kind of exactly picking up on what you're saying about Scotland. It's such an important position that sets the tempo for the whole team. And yeah. And these things.
Well, Duncan Taylor hasn't really had a competitive rugby for 2 years.
No, a very talented guy.
Yeah.
So the only thing I can think of, right, the only thing I can think of to fight Townsend's corner here is he looks at Finn Russell and he thinks, well, this guy is awesome. Because, you know, towards the end of the game, people were like, well, don't fire Townsend, fire the defensive coach. But imagine being a defensive coach and told you've got to play Finn Russell. Like, well, I may as well not show up to work. you know, fine. So he's then gone, okay, well, I've got Finn Russell and he's pretty amazing. I've got Hogg. Maybe I need more solidity within the centres to do other things. When actually what he should have done is just thrown caution to the wind and, you know, pick the guys that are going to attack.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
That's the only thing I can think of.
More attack, not less. Don't try and temper your amazing attackers with some stable guys.
Yeah.
Throw in more attackers.
Exactly. Go and get yourself Hugh Jones.
Rory Hutchinson.
What's his name? Espria from Newcastle.
Tino Espria.
That's the one. You know, just go for it.
For what it's worth, I agree with you that I would not get rid of Gregor Townsend.
I definitely wouldn't.
Were it not Gregor Townsend and someone that we'd seen do this great work with Glasgow and with a lot of these Scotland players in the squad.
Dave Rennie?
And this romantic memories we have of him for the Lions and the fact we know he's been groomed by the Scottish Rugby Union for years for this role. If it was Eddie Jones, let's say, who'd had exactly the same record and had Scotland playing exactly the same way as Greg Townsend, we would be sat here saying he's got to go. 100%.
My view is, I'm not saying he should stay, I'm not saying he should go. I'm saying wait and see what the alternatives are. Take the New Zealand route, which is, you've exited the World Cup, have a full review. If he's still the best guy after your review, keep him. If he's not, bring in either Cotter again or Dave Rennie.
Jim Mallander started up there, yeah.
Jim Mallander's up there at the moment.
Or he will be soon. I don't know if he started.
As is Cockers. I mean, I can't see Cockers being the right call there. But there you go.
But like I say, I was only playing purely devil's advocate, and the stats do not look good when you look back in hindsight. But it's also when it's very raw at the minute.
Mm. Yeah.
Positive notes for Scotland, though. I mean, if we can get many, many more years out of Jamie Ritchie, that's going to be very positive.
He is a very good, very abrasive. He was multiple times right on the edge of what was legal. But that's what you want in an open side flanker.
Yeah, he's brilliant.
It's exactly what you want.
He never stopped either. I mean, I know that's like the bare minimum for a professional rugby player, try hard. But he really tries hard.
You know, you talked about the composure of Japan earlier. That's the one issue I have with Scotland. There was all sorts of back chat to the ref, loads.
Well, do you not see the Japanese waving a card? How was the Japanese doing that? Have I got that confused? Or was that... No, that's Uruguayans, I think, against Wales.
Yeah, I think that might have been.
Someone was waving cards and it wasn't a tier one nation.
But Scotland's mentality, they just didn't, they just weren't at home. The fact that they were getting, they were really rattled and getting ratty with the ref.
Yeah. And just, the ref is keeping him in it, frankly.
Well, I thought he was fair. I mean, a lot of people said, oh, he didn't marshal the offside line, but everything he did was balanced
what
and
do you
consistent,
think,
which is actually all I care
about.
What do you
think
about?
Of the
head-on
head? And he's like, yeah, thanks for the referral. We'll be playing on, cheers.
I was so delighted with that decision. Because sometimes you can't stop accidents happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. Although, I was very happy with it. Well, I thought it was the right call.
The flip side, it does seem a bit arbitrary going head on head because he's too high, but it's head on head, let it go. But had the guy been 6 inches to the left and it's his shoulder, then red card. That does seem a bit weird going. That's like luck, whether you get a red card.
Yeah, it is.
Or not.
So you're in the wrong position. You were just fortunate that your shoulder didn't hit the opposition's head rather than your head hitting the opposition's head.
Yeah.
Although, if you play through the framework does allow for a head-to-head, and if it's applied properly, it should be a red card.
Yeah. And you can't argue that Shottahori wasn't... He dipped a little bit, but no sudden
change
and other red cards have had slight dips of similar level.
It wasn't consistent, but I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I thought it was the right decision.
Bottom line is, if Scotland go out, I don't want them to have any option of blaming anyone for it, because we've had 4 years of them blaming what's his face, the South African ref.
Can we make some
Joubert.
Can we now turn our attention to making jokes about they should have accepted the draw?
Or
in hindsight, a 0-0 draw with Japan in Japan would be a very good result for Scottish
rugby. Scotland,
Or the SRU taking legal action for allowing the game to go ahead.
Way.
Or Scotland's lawyers are filing for actual bodily harm.
Good. I like them all. I like them all. They're all equally valid and equally as funny. There was some absolute Scottish bedwetting bloggers getting so upset about this. It's disrespectful to Japan. No, it's not. It's disrespectful to you.
Take it. If God, any home nation that goes out, they'd be getting stick from the rest of the countries.
Exactly.
That's how it should be. Just because we're English doesn't mean we're not allowed to.
In mine
and Phil's case, just because we're English doesn't mean we're not allowed to have a bit of banter.
That's disrespectful to Japan, mate. Disrespectful to Japan. Lols.
I'll tell you what we should do. Because some Japanese players will definitely get mentioned in this. Now, to be fair to all 20 teams, and so from now on it will get, now our focus will narrow and narrow. Let's pick a team of the pool stages where we've got all 20 nations to pick from.
Are no longer in the competition. Because it's easy to pick like, oh, I think the All Blacks have got good props. Or those Springboks second rows are mighty impressive.
I've put a few names down and I think it'll be quite well spread anyway. If you two are thinking in a like-minded fashion.
Yes, fine.
Where do you want to start then? Back three or front row?
Front row, because the hooker, it's obvious.
Is it?
Shottahori.
That is relatively obvious.
His offloading is incredible. His ball carrying is unreal.
Yeah, he has been sensational.
Do you know, it would be so easy with it just to name two Georgian props, but frankly, I thought they were terrible against Australia, so I won't do that.
Tight head, I've gone for Ty Furlong.
Yes, I did.
I think he's been brilliant. His ball carrying has been exceptional, and his scrimmaging has been very, very good.
Good sign for Ireland because there's a few of their key players have looked more like their old self than the ones we saw in the last 9 months.
Loosehead prop I struggled with.
I did. I wanted to give a mention to Titi Lamisetelli, who's just carried relentlessly for USA.
Yeah, that's a good point. He's played tight head in this, but he can play loosehead.
And I was having a look, them giving away many scrum penalties as well.
Their scrimmaging has been very good. He's been Taufete and Lasica have been USA's best players. Best ball carriers.
Whoa. We're not the best players.
Best players.
No. AJ has been the best player.
Best players.
But they've been very good accompaniments to him.
If Genge had played more, I think it probably would have been him.
Mm. Joe Marler has played very well in the absence and played a lot.
The thing is, I discount anything England have done so far because they've beaten two tier twos and a 14-man Super Rugby team. So let's just hold off on them for now.
Locks. Who have you liked? I thought Scott Barrett's looked really good.
Scott Barrett has been.
Bearing in mind, we were like, oh, bro, they've got no Brody Retallick.
Yeah.
He's looked really good.
Yeah. He's a baller. But again, they've had one hard game, haven't they? And the rest has been a little bit of a walkthrough.
Who you're up against.
Yeah, that would be. I tell you who looked really good. I don't want to say it's Peterson for USA. Like every time he has come on and carried hard, he has made some good yards.
Any locks that you had? I thought Marrow's been looking really good.
Marrow has been good. His line-out work has been very, very good. And his carrying's been good. There's a couple of South Africans you could mention.
Yeah.
Mostert has been good.
Lude
has been good.
Baby-faced assassin.
I think, obviously, Alan Wynn has been very important to the way that they play. But there's been few. Well, I mean, again, you could go for some of the Japanese boys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They are integral to what they do.
Moore and Thompson, because of the way that they fit into that team.
So, take your pick. Alan Wynn and one other.
Mostert or Itoji.
Okay. Back row, I went Wainwright as my six.
Wainwright has played very well. I loved Jake Pelledri.
I think Jake
Pelledri.
He was wearing a seven on his back when he's played.
Yeah, so I'd put him at seven because I'd go for one Manuel Gaminara, who is the captain
Gaminara,
who is the captain of Uruguay. And I actually think that, you know, Uruguay, if you look at where they've come from to where they are now, they lost 13-35 to Wales. But they actually won a game against Fiji. I mean, this is remarkable.
And
you watch them play and they're good. They are legitimately good.
Wales butchered three tries, but they also scored a couple of very easy ones right towards the end of the game to make the scoreline a bit flattering, arguably, towards Wales.
So what's your back row? I've got Wainwright and Jimeno, and I couldn't really pick a seven.
Well, if you put in Pelledri at seven,
you
could put him or Peter Steph de Toy.
But
both of them are...
Oh, he's a six, but we're seven.
I think both Pelledri and Peter Steph de Toy are really sixes wearing sevens.
Yeah, I would just say this. Look, we're going to have plenty of time to talk about Peter Steph de Toy in future podcasts.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
Halfbacks.
So I've gone for Nick White at nine.
Oh, that's an interesting shout.
Nick White's been excellent.
I think he really has been superb.
I went for Gareth Davis.
Gareth Davis is a good shout. Gareth Davis's try against Uruguay at the end. I know he's playing on the wing, but
it
just
so
showed the pace and the step on the boy.
Wales always have this. I remember years ago. I mean, it wasn't their vintage era, but I just remember I was at uni in Bath and they had Andy Williams. No, that was before I was at uni in Bath.
You had Gareth Cooper when you were
Gareth
in Bath.
Cooper and Andy Williams. They had just electric Welsh halfbacks. Scrum arse.
Hang on, am I thinking the Dragons now? I am thinking the Dragons because that's
they
what Gareth.
They were both rapid.
Yeah, Gareth Cooper ended up at the Dragons. Did Gareth Cooper he went from Bath? Did he go to Dragons and back to Bath?
I'm not sure. I think he got a bad injury, but I don't remember.
Yeah, Gareth Cooper was in superb condition for a long time.
He reminds me of Gareth Davis in that he's just explosive, just can break off the base and run 50 metres to score. So Gareth Davis and George Ford.
Well, George Ford has only played. I mean, yeah, fine, George Ford.
Name me a fly half that's played better.
I'm going to name you the guy who is second top point scorer in the World Cup so far and plays for Uruguay.
Really?
Felipe Bershetti.
Who's
their 10, who has played. So George Ford has played brilliantly. I do take the point that he's played.
But could George teams. Ford have led Uruguay to win against Fiji? I'm not sure.
Let's put the Uruguay second top point scorer.
Yeah.
A historic win against a much higher ranked opposition.
Yeah.
And really good account of themselves in all games.
All round, yeah. Uruguay are probably the most improved team in this World Cup cycle.
Go on then.
And a load of their players are now playing Major League Rugby. So it does show how important that kind of competition is for world rugby.
What's his name then, sorry?
Felipe Bershetti.
Bershetti, whatever it is. Wingers, this is easy, isn't it?
So, I mean, I've got one, two, three, four, five guys who have just been unbelievable, who've played on the wing. I'm going to try and accommodate all of them. But the guys I've got, Matsushima and Fukioka, one of those two pick it, but Matsushima's played more.
Matsushima.
Radrada, who I might move to 13.
Yeah, he has played in the centre.
Yes, he's good.
Yeah. Do that.
Josh Adams, I think, has been brilliant.
He has been great.
And Cheslin Kolbe.
What about Corabetti?
Corabetti's been good as well. Yeah.
There was a guy
who... I don't know, has he been better than those others?
Maybe put him in ahead of Josh Adams.
There is one guy you've missed who definitely needs to be spoken about because he worked so bloody hard. That's Jeff Hassler. I mean, the guy... I think he might even not have a club at the moment. But he works and works and works. And he's head and shoulders above most of his mates.
I'm going to let you... This is your back three player, Phil. So Radrada into the centre.
Radrada's
at
13.
Matsushima on one wing. Who are you having?
Matsushima.
Fukioka, Adams, Corabetti and Kolbe.
I'm going to have Corabetti and have Kolbe at 15.
Oh,
love it.
Coward.
Love that. Which means we've got to pick a 12 and then we've got a back line.
What about Siali Pietau?
Good shout.
That's a really good shout.
Good shout. He has been superb.
Yeah, I tell you what, I really enjoyed watching the workmanlike displays of Hadley Parks.
getting battered,
but carries on going.
Yeah,
he played every minute.
He played a full game against Uruguay as well, didn't he?
Hadley Parks is
4 days after getting hammered.
Yeah, Hadley Parks is. You watch him have the odd game where he looks like he's running in treacle or a rag doll, and then so normally he follows that up by being a man of the match.
Yeah,
hang on, who was the Irish journalist? I'm going to have to be careful what I say now. There's an Irish journalist who proved himself to be, I don't know, somewhat stupid, I guess would be the best way to put it. When he used Hadley Parks as an example of the genetic superiority of New Zealanders compared to people, not islanders, people from the Isle of Ireland, because Hadley Parks managed to run down...
Stockers.
Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
There was some ridiculous...
Yeah, and it was that was the game when Hadley Parks was man of the match. But the game before, was it against England? Or it was against someone. And he had the worst game. He couldn't keep up with like an England forward. And everyone's going, God, how slow was Hadley Parks? And then he goes and gasses to catch up with Stockers.
Yeah, that was
impressive. Genetics.
So there you go, I'm predicting it. Hadley Parks, man of the match this weekend. Next weekend.
Who have they got? England?
Wales. France.
France.
Of course.
Wales, France. England, Australia. New Zealand versus Ireland, grudge match. And South Africa versus Japan, grudge match.
Yeah. England v Australia, always a grudge match.
Yes.
You know,
Wales-France is the sort of least grudgy match of the four.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see France winning that big time. I really can.
Anyway, we'll
just remember Paris. Just remember Paris, opening game of the Six Nations.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
What other questions do we have on our agenda, JB? Was there one about...
I've got lots of questions about the Prem Cup, but no doubt we're not allowed to talk about that.
Great competition.
Did you work it this weekend?
No,
too?
Not this weekend.
Did you not?
No.
How was it last weekend?
It was fantastic. The last couple of weekends have been absolutely brilliant.
So I've come
great
back,
rugby.
I've come back from Japan, and my Sky dish is not facing the right satellite or some such thing. And therefore, I've missed all the Prem Cup action.
Oh, devastating. No.
I genuinely am. That was, you know.
That's why you should get the BT Sport app where you can catch up with the games you missed, watch highlights, and rewatch games.
Yeah, well, I've been watching it on a Fire Stick. I do have the BT Sport app on my iPad, but that was otherwise in use playing Peppa Pig. So, you know, you can't have it all your own way, is what I'm saying.
I'll feel your pain.
Yeah, because we do need to focus on the Premiership because it's back in action pretty soon.
It is. God, we're going to have to start having domestic podcasts and World Cup podcasts, aren't
we? We've got all those extra downloads. Oh no!
We've also got to have a fantasy rugby draft at some point.
Oh, this Wednesday we're having our draft.
Is it this Wednesday?
This Wednesday, 9 PM.
9 PM.
Or is it 8:30 PM? I don't know.
Ooh.
Have a look. Go and have a look on the website. It will tell you. It will count down to the time.
I need to get in touch with the commissioner.
Yeah.
So I do actually have a question, although I suspect that you're looking through our Twitter there for other questions, Tim. My question is this. The last week of the pool stages, we've seen Australia not look good. We've seen Wales not look good. We've seen, obviously, that classic between Japan and Scotland, which doesn't fit the trend. And we've also seen Ireland playing a very powerful brand of rugby. Do you think this last stage of the pool games, what you're seeing is the teams trying to win, but without showing the other teams what it is about their strategy that they're going to use in the knockouts?
So I think there is an element that specific plays they've not wanted to reveal. So specific strike moves, specific line-out moves, they will keep close to their chest. But the general way of that they're playing is going to be pretty similar to how they are going to end up playing for the majority. Now, they might change things up for specific time periods in the games, but I really think particularly Australia and Ireland and Wales, because Wales did it all Six Nations, those three teams in particular are going to play a very narrow, very tight, very risk-averse brand of rugby in these knockout stages.
Yeah, I think with Wales in particular, they play their best rugby when they are focused on one area of weakness of the opposition. That's when they do their real damage. So I think whatever they do, it'll be rather specialist. I think Ireland are going to go full out power rugby. I think England are going to do the same thing.
England are probably the one where we've seen them repeatedly try and bring. So strike moves off scrums and lineouts, and trying to bring, it's the kind of two dummy runners. So a dummy runner behind. So if Manu's playing 13, you have Ford out the back to Farrell behind Manu, and then Farrell will have two options. They have Elliot Daly coming short with Johnny May or Watson coming round, and that's a strike move they've used repeatedly, both in Six Nations and in the warm-up and in the World Cup. So I think we'll see a bit of that, but England will also rely on their set piece and heavily rely on their ball carriers, subject to injuries.
Well, Billy Vanapola's injury.
And Joe Marler injury,
which
is not an ideal time for Joe Marler to get injured.
No.
I can't think of anything really that nice to say about the Australian team. They've got some big locks. They've got
their set piece has been impressive.
Set piece has been better, yeah. I mean, they did a number on that Georgia scrum, and that's what Georgia brings to the party.
The biggest problem that Australia have got at the moment is they do not have a settled back line.
No.
I genuinely don't know if they're going to go for Lealiafano, Tamua, or Foley at 10.
You have to go to Foley.
I don't think they will go Foley.
I would definitely go Foley. Maybe Tamua, maybe Karevi, something like that. As long as Corabetti plays, they're in with a good
shot. Yeah. I would go for Karevi.
I would
be tempted.
If only had a world class fullback.
We should get in touch with our boys from Green and Gold.
We should actually
do this. This is a World Cup, and it's England Australia. We need to do a preview with the Green and Gold boys.
That's a good shout.
I'll get them on the line.
If I was Checker, I would go for both Karevi and Kurundrani.
Yeah,
I would go for the Bash Bros. Hope that Curtly Beale has recovered from his concussion. So you've got a playmaker out the back. But I would have those two crashing.
Curtly Beale, yes. Curtly Beale plays.
Crashing everything down the middle. Because the weakness of the England 10-12-13 is the defence.
It certainly is.
The biggest weakness, and I would be targeting, I'd be making Tuilagi make decisions, hoping him to jam out of the line going for the big hit, and then...
Well, he's not the one that I'm worried about making the big hit.
Well, who...
you've... Another one of your predictions was Owen Farrell red cards.
Yeah, where are they?
Well, they're the opposition.
Why is the well run dry? I don't get it.
They're the opposition. I think
legitimately, and we'll see how it goes with France, but so far, every prediction you've made has been false.
Well, France beat Argentina.
Yes,
France did beat Argentina.
So that might be one of your...
And France did not lose to England. Admit it.
It's fair to say France did not lose to England.
But in the podcast that we recorded after your night out with the pilot, you predicted at least three times that England would beat France and at least three times that France would beat England.
That is the genius of the 45-minute podcast. Well, the problem with that podcast is... Well, Tim wasn't there to keep us on the straight. Where were you, Tim? Where were you when we were up at 6 a.m?
That was Extinction Rebellion's fault. So because of the Extinction Rebellion issues, I stayed in London last Sunday night rather than come back to Manchester because the boss just
Because you were protesting?
Yeah, exactly. Outraged.
You were doing yoga.
Exactly.
In St. James's Park.
I walked through Trafalgar Square, by the way, this weekend. I was down in London for a mate's birthday. I went through Trafalgar Square. Oh my word! That's a whole Jesus. What are they? Anyway,
I saw a great video today about Extinction Rebellion in Rotterdam or not Rotterdam. What's the one? What's the Amsterdam? Amsterdam, and they'd set up hammocks underneath the bridge to stop the boats, and they're just swinging in the little hammocks underneath the bridge above a canal, and some bright spark has walked along the bridge. And he's cut each hammock individually.
Like secateurs cut it at one side.
Yeah. But it is glorious to watch. Nothing could make me happy.
I was there in Trafalgar Square and all of the Tarquins and Arabellas were out in force.
Yep, as they would be.
I just realised one thing. Can I do this now? I completely forgot to tweet something earlier because I was having a family meal. Like, me and my brother were huddled around my phone watching the Japan game.
A wireless.
And... So as a result, I totally forgot to post my tweet, my traditional tweet when a big team lose of
your boys took a hell of a beating.
And I prepared it before the game because I was confident, albeit a few days ago I was very
so
much
was it
not
like
confident.
Mr. Miyagi?
No. I was very confident of Scotland losing.
Scotland winning.
Scotland losing. Days ago, I thought, Scotland are going to do them.
Mr. Nintendo.
But immediately before it, I had a feeling. So I wrote the following. William Wallace. Darius from Pop Idol, Billy Connolly, Sean Connery, Rab C. Nesbitt, St. Andrew,
Nicola Sturgeon,
Andy Murray, The Family Ness, Lewis Capaldi, Shrek, David Moyes, Susan Boyle, Nicola Sturgeon, Wee Jimmy Cranky, David Sneddon, Groundskeeper Willie, Simon Danielli, W.P. Nell, Cornell Dupria, your boys took a hell of a beating.
Cornel Dupria. I hope he's okay. Has he recovered from his
throat injury? He played very well for Worcester last weekend.
Good to know. Anyway. Okay. Have we got anything else to cover off, or shall we? Should we leave it?
Well, do you want to give your kind of one word predictions for next weekend? I'm sure we'll do it in more detail.
All right. How about very, very quick? Let's not make a long conversation of this, but a lot of people have been talking in the wake of this World Cup pool stage and Fiji looking really good, albeit not getting the results. Japan looking really good and getting the results. People have started saying, come on, World Rugby, Six Nations, Rugby Championship, whatever it is, get your act together, we need to do something. Mm-hmm. And we sort of touched on it earlier. So just briefly, we're in a very quick World Rugby meeting, top brass are there, and I'm saying, what do we do? What would you do, Phil?
I agree with JB's point that you can't just totally disrupt, like promoting Georgia to the Six Nations. You can't just totally disrupt a competition. And I think you take Japan or Fiji or both of them out of the Pacific Nations Cup and the competition just kind of falls apart.
Mm.
That said, I do want more games with those guys, those supposed tier two or now tier one nations against the bigger boys. So it's got to be it can only be considered as a global calendar shift to more games like the one that was proposed but fell through earlier this year.
Okay.
But I don't know how you can square that circle because there are certain nations who are never going to vote for that because it jeopardizes their place or potentially jeopardizes their place at the top table.
One crazy idea I would do. I would take Fiji and I would have them based in. I'm trying to think of a place. I would have them based in
Barcelona,
Spain. I know Barcelona's a great show. I would have Fiji based
in
Spain, and because they've got so many players in Europe, France, and it's easy to get to, and that I think that would be a massive draw, and we would go to Barcelona
absolutely.
For a weekend, so it's an international with Fiji.
Without a second thought.
So that's one issue. That's one thing I would do is I would have a Fiji.
So
based in
I actually
Europe.
Think that's a very tame idea. I don't think that's crazy at all. Because my idea would be not so much to move Fiji, but to buy Fiji. I would buy, if I had enough money, if I had Hans Peter Wild money, I would buy Fiji, the brand, and all the rights to it. I'd effectively privatise the Fijian Union for my own good, and also for their good, to be fair. Because I actually think that if you look at what they did in the World Cup, they are outstanding rugby players with an international draw far beyond their homeland. And they're never going to play a home game anyway.
No, and what's the point? Because actually,
they just can't,
you're going to get a tiny crowd who aren't going to pay big money, but they're worth a lot of cash. And
loads
ultimately,
of cash.
The objective is, as sad as that might sound, like, well, you're not going to the island of Fiji, the objective should be you want Vakatawa not to play for France, but to play for Fiji.
If it was a profitable enterprise.
Exactly.
Which I'm pretty sure it could be. In the same way that people watch the Barbarians, or you know, I know it sounds a little bit degrading, but say let's like the Harlem Globetrotters, which were a draw in their own right. If it was legitimately profitable, well then they could hold the occasional game back home with a tier one team, much like was it Samoa did it a few years ago. I mean, it nearly bankrupted the union, but they still did it. So that would be my solution to. The issue of Fiji. I've got a more pressing question, though, I'd like to bring.
And just say this. So that's what I do with Fiji. Bring them to Europe so they're based there. Japan, I actually think more games against tier one nations, but keep them where they are because it's a very rich country.
But do you not think they
should... So they can sustain it.
So the way I look at this is South Africa have always wanted to leave Sanzor and come over to the Six Nations. They've always wanted to do it because they know where the cash is. And they're absolutely right. That is exactly where the cash is. It is in the Six Nations. And that's why Australia and New Zealand want to keep hold of them, because they are very small markets. However, if South Africa moved over to the European competition for whatever reason that may be, that makes sense. We know it makes sense.
Time zones.
Because of the time zones. But then you replace them with Japan. And that also
Japan
makes sense.
Japan to Argentina, though. Jeez.
Yeah, but Japan to New Zealand and Australia makes a lot more sense because of the time zones. So actually, you know, and also the economics involved. Because otherwise, you'd be looking at putting Japan into a competition, presumably, if you did change around, I'm not a fan of changing around, but if you did change around, with the European teams. And the time zones mess up completely. But actually, with Australia and New Zealand, that'd be fine.
I get that, but Japan to Argentina, as I say, that's bonkers.
Yeah, but it's no different to you know anywhere else in Sanzor to Argentina. I mean, it's miles away from everywhere.
No, isn't that like literally the Japan and Argentina's opposite side of the country? It's like going from, it's like England to Australia.
But is that not the same for?
Is it, or am I completely wrong on that?
I got no idea. We need to get a map. I mean, I'll Google.
Maybe it's not quite that drastic.
No, in my head, it's at least that, if not more.
But it can't be more. Because
what?
It can't be more than
England to Australia.
Yeah, I mean, that's literally opposite sides of the globe.
They are pretty much. So, yeah, it's about that.
Yeah, that
so maybe
work.
So that's why.
But the outlier there is Argentina, not Japan. Japan, Australia and New Zealand make
it
more
depends
sense.
On what the problem is you're trying to fix. If you're trying to get more meaningful games, that solves that. I think fundamentally, and the first issue is, how do you make Japanese players play for Japan, Fijians play for Fiji? And that's that. I mean, the Fiji, Samoa, Tonga would be infinitely better if Fijians, Tongans, and Samoans played for Fiji, Tonga, and Samoa instead of Ireland or France, for example. Just to pick two randomly.
Yeah, I'm kind of with that.
So anyway,
right,
So that'll get talked about lots more. But yes, what were you saying? Do we like? Oh, go on, JB. Sorry, you got some.
Yeah. So I've just got one more thing. Now that the group stages have come to a close, and we know what a wonderful country Japan is, and by the way, what a wonderful host that country is. And that would be, if you were going to put in a bid for another country, which is not a traditional rugby power, to hold a World Cup, who would it be?
Just one. It is further from Tokyo to Buenos Aires than it is from London to Sydney.
Is it really?
Yeah. Wow. About a
Google Maps can't even find a way.
I'm doing it on a different free map tool because I knew Google Maps wouldn't work. It is about nearly 1,000 miles further.
Wow.
So what's it's a it, long old way.
So what's it from Australia to to Argentina? Because it looks to me as if New Zealand is actually the closest country.
Yeah.
Oh, no, actually, obviously the closest country would be South Africa. Because they've only got to go over the South Atlantic.
Or Uruguay. So Buenos Aires to Sydney, 7,000 miles. Tokyo to Sydney, 11,500 miles.
Wow.
And London to Sydney, 10,500 miles.
Hmm. But Japan to Sydney, not so bad. I'm guessing 6,000 miles.
Let's have a look.
No, go 5,000. No, 6,000.
For some reason, this has started typing in backwards. What the hell? Let's do that. There we go. 3,000. According to this. Tokyo.
So
to
that I mean, it's closer. It's closer from. I know. One. It's closer from Sydney to Singapore than it is from Sydney to Perth.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Now that. So that is a good
Perth is the most remote city on Earth.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Right. Give me your pitches then for alternative rugby venues, alternative rugby countries to host the World Cup, which aren't traditional powers.
Do you know what I'm looking at? This World Cup that we've seen, and there are two nations that have gone backwards at a rate of knots. I mentioned Samoa. They can't host a World Cup, but Canada can. So let's take it to Canada and try and give them a leg up.
Canada would be a good shout. Canada, I just wonder if it's a bit too small.
Yeah, well, I suppose the issue, again,
the landmass is big enough.
Landmass is big enough, but again...
Population, California's a bigger population than Canada.
35 million
something
in
like
Canada.
That.
But again, you've got one issue there in that Canada is closer... Toronto is closer to New York than to Vancouver.
Mm.
Got massive... massive land to cover, so maybe for that reason not Canada,
the land distances, once you're flying, it's like, I know Japan is nowhere near as big, but we did quite a lot of miles in Japan, and flying an extra hour or two on some of our flights wouldn't have made much difference.
I think Vancouver to Toronto is like a
four or five hours.
Yeah.
We did a couple of two-hour flights
within.
And if you make a two-hour flight, a four-hour flight, with your time
and they've got,
into the airport,
they've got the whole French thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Montreal. So I admit that there are downsides to your plan. But maybe Canada and the borders. So, you use Seattle, New York.
Detroit, Bethel. Chicago.
Yeah, all those.
Boston.
All those places are good.
Yeah.
Mm.
And maybe in America's World Cup.
So America's World Cup.
Yeah, well,
that's
certainly
a
North
continent.
American World Cup.
You're talking two continents, North and South?
Yes.
Or is that one continent?
Well, maybe. Maybe.
Well, in risk, it's two continents.
Yes, it is.
I think it is.
So in risk,
or is it?
Well, possibly even three continents if you class Central America as a continent.
Yeah, mm.
Yeah, we can skip out Central America. They don't play rugby there.
So
as much as I'd love to go to Cuba and Mexico, that'd be great.
Phil?
Non-traditional
rugby playing country that you'd like that you'd like to...
So one thing, it's got to be a big country. And I don't necessarily mean geographically. It has to have a big population.
Mm.
They've got to have and the reason why you've got to have the big population is because you need the infrastructure. And the infrastructure broadly...
And by the way, which is why Ireland cannot host a World Cup. Let me repeat, they can't do it.
It would be very, very difficult for them to do it.
They can do it without help, but not on their own.
Infrastructure, broadly, I would class in three things. One, you need the stadia, which plenty of places could do that. Any place that has a reasonable level of professional football league could do that. But then you need the infrastructure, so the transport networks, rail, airplanes and road. And very importantly, you need the hotels. So, for example, Manchester which is a big footballing city, if you try and get a hotel on match day for football, match day when United or City, are, particularly United, are playing at home, it's a nightmare. Hotel prices are at least double.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Liverpool.
Oh, that's why London this weekend was so expensive, because of the American football, as well as the American football was a big one.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. But I was in Liverpool a few weeks ago on a Saturday night when Liverpool were playing at home, and it was like £300 for the only hotel I could find that was quite a long way out of the city centre. So they just you need somewhere with the right infrastructure. So you're almost looking at somewhere that is a tourist destination as well as having a professional football league.
Go on.
I know where Phil's going. He's going after the travesty of the 2019 World Cup, Spain.
Exactly. That's what.
So Spain would be bloody good. Spain has got the hotel rooms if you're doing it out of
and
season.
And that Catalan border region is massive rugby land, yep. Rugby heartland.
Yeah.
The
Catalan and the Basque areas.
It'd be the We Are So Sorry World Cup.
Yes.
We are making things right World Cup.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it'd be. We could have Barcelona, we could have Madrid, we could have Valencia. All places actually that we've been to and
Seville.
Recommend. Seville.
San Sebastian.
That'd be great for Uruguay and Argentina as well.
Exactly. About time it went to a Spanish-speaking nation. I mean, I don't know how Argentina will feel about it going to Spain before it goes to Argentina. But it does make a lot of sense. Everyone can fly there. English is well-known. Yeah. Spanish
France
is the main language.
And the UK and Ireland on the doorstep with regular low-budget flights. We'd be there en masse every week. You could go every weekend.
You could even host.
You could.
Well, I'm going to work, and I'm doing one on a Friday to go and watch three games of Rugby World Cup matches.
Which we could maybe even do for the next one in France, 2023.
Oh, yes.
Perfect.
And you could even host games in, because it's so easy and accessible, you could host a game in Rome, you could host a game in Toulouse, you could host a game in Lisbon.
Mm. Portugal and Spain, if you could just somehow keep it to those two, it would be bloody great.
Yeah, because Portugal in the past have had quite a rich history of World Cup attendances.
Yes, they have.
So, yeah, give me Spain with sharing the love a little bit around the region.
That does remind me, we need to look at the Tier 2 Six Nations schedule, because I think Portugal are back in the top league.
We will look into it in detail. Right. I am firmly in the camp of going back to Madrid. But that's a discussion for another time.
100%. But what we will do is have a podcast later in the week previewing the start of the Premiership. Oh, my God!
Yes!
And previewing the World... Finally,
some rugby
maybe, to be confirmed, maybe with the Green and Gold boys.
They don't know anything about this, so...
No, they don't.
We'll surprise
them. They listen.
Them.
All right, boys, how you doing? Yes, but we will be previewing the... In fact, we'll have to get together and do two pods. One on the quarterfinals, one on the Premiership.
MWDP is back.
Oh, my God. MWDP is back. Midweek Domestic Podcast.
Before we finally go, one word. I'm going to read out the quarterfinals. I just want you to tell me the one word. No explanation, no nothing, just the winner. So the first quarterfinal, 8:15, Saturday morning, England, Australia. One word, Tim Cocker.
England.
JB.
Australia.
I also go England. 11:15 Saturday morning, New Zealand, Ireland. Tim Cocker.
New Zealand.
JB.
New Zealand.
Sunday morning, 8:15, Wales, France.
Wales.
France.
Wales. And 11:15 Sunday morning, Japan, South Africa.
This is the romantic one, but no, South Africa.
South Africa.
South Africa. I just can't see past it.
The favourites.
I have also gone for predictably. They're all actually, for the bookies, they're quite heavy favourites. The favourites are significant favourites in each game.
Well, let's see when the teams come out. We can dissect that a little bit more. But thank you very much for listening. Hit subscribe in that channel, wherever you get it. We are on Spotify. We are on Acast. We are on Google Podcasts, on Apple Podcasts, wherever else you get your podcast. We're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He is at Jay Beardmore.
I am.
If you want to see someone picking fights and making predictions, that is where you go. Actually, there's been some very entertaining stuff. Just watching from afar, JB. You've been on form this World Cup.
My favourite comment made by... a journalist about you on Twitter was, That's why everyone likes you, JB. And every time I see you getting into a spat, I think, oh, that's why everyone likes you, JB.
Exactly.
And I'm Matt Cocker, and Phil is lurking. You can slide into his DMs if you can find him.
Always lurking.
Let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.